Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's July the 17th. We are in Triasra Novadia. We're in Pasuk Zayin. Continuing with the Nevuah against Esav. Until the boundary, till the border, they sent you all those who were the men of your covenant, meaning those who had an alliance with Esav and agreed to go with them to war against an enemy. So they sent you, which means they got you to go all the way till the border. Hishiucha, they convinced you. Yachlu lecha anshei shlomecha. Those who had been the men of peace with you, they were able to overcome you, which means they tricked you. They convinced you that we can go to war. We'll go to war together. They got you to come out to the border, assuming that they would fight with you, meaning on your side, and instead they attacked you and defeated you. So Ovadia is saying that Esav is going to be double crossed. In the end, when Esav is defeated, there's going to be an element of trickery that Esav will be duped in his army going out to the border along with his allies, but the allies will then turn on him and defeat him. Lach machaya simu mazor tachtecha. Your bread, they will use as a sickness against you. They'll use your own bread as a sickness against you. Ein tvuna bo, there is no wisdom in Esav. Esav will be duped, and his own bread will be used as a sickness against him, which seems to mean that these would-be, or these erstwhile friends will then take away Esav's bread. The Chazal tell us, and Rashi brings it over here, that Yaakov used bread against Esav. When Yaakov wanted to buy the Bechorah from Esav, Esav was only willing to let go of it for food. And Yaakov gave Esav lechem unezid adashim. He gave him bread and the lentil soup, and for that he got the Bechorah. So the bread was used against Esav. That says it's a reference to Esav's weakness with physicality, with materialism. Esav is easily duped when it comes to the prospect of getting materialism. It's something that drives him, and he ceases to see things clearly. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Halo bayoma hunu mashem. On that day, says Hashem, ve'avarti chachamim me'edom, I will get rid of all wise people from Edom, usfuna mehar Esav, and again wisdom from the mountain of Esav. V'chatu giborecha teman, and your strong ones, your warriors, will be scared in Teman. Teman means the south, because Har Esav is to the south of Eretz Yisrael. Leman yikares ish mehar Esav mikatel, in order that all men will be cut off from Har Esav, from all of the death that will be inflicted upon the mountain of Esav, the attacks that will come against Esav, the strong ones of Esav will be scared, and they will be all the strong ones of Esav will be cut off. There will be so much death on Har Esav. Why is all this going to happen? Mechamas achicha Yaakov, from the theft of your brother Yaakov, from stealing from your brother Yaakov, techasacha v'usha, you will be covered in shame. V'nichrata le'olam, and you will be cut off forever. As we saw last week, one of the primary things that Esav is being taken to task for is theft, is taking away Yaakov's money, making it difficult for Yaakov to live because of taking away Yaakov's livelihood. And now we're going to have other references to things that Esav did to Yaakov when Esav was not the main enemy against Yaakov, as we will see. Biyom amarchami neged, on the day that you stood from afar. Biyom shvos zarim chelo, on the day that foreigners took Yaakov's army or strength into captivity. And you stood aside and let it happen. The Nachrim Ba'u Sharav, and foreigners came into his, Yaakov's gates. Val Yerushalayim Yadu Gorol, and upon Yerushalayim they threw the Gorol, which literally means the lottery, but it means that it was Yerushalayim's turn to be attacked. And you didn't lift a finger to help. Gamata Kachad Mehem, you are considered like one of them. Esav is blamed when others attack Yaakov, and Esav does not help. Esav is expected to help Yaakov. Ve'al terev yom achicha b'yom nachro. Do not see in the day of your brother, meaning the day that your brother is in trouble. Don't just stand there watching b'yom nachro, in the day that he, your brother, is given over into the hands of enemies. Don't be happy for the children of Yehuda when they are lost. Don't make your mouth large, which means don't talk big on the day of the pain of Yaakov. This is in ascending order of what Esav does wrong when Yaakov is attacked. They stand aside and let it happen. They are happy when it happens. They talk big when it happens. And then it goes on. Al tavo v'shar ami biyom edom. Don't come into the gates of my nation on the day that of their pain, meaning that you're coming into their gates to see what you can get there. Al tere gam atabira so biyom edo. Don't watch in his evil, meaning Yaakov's evil, on the day that he is in pain. Don't send, meaning don't send your hand against his wealth on the day that he's in pain, that he's vulnerable. And so Esav would do that as well. They would seize the opportunity to take Yaakov's wealth. Do not stand at the juncture to cut off those who run away, meaning to be the ones who will, those of Yaakov who are able to get away from the enemy. Esav would stand at the crossroads and cut down those who are running away. Val tasker sridav biyom tzara, don't give over to the enemy, those who escape on the day of pain. Don't do any of this, Esav. So he goes, don't do any of this. Ki karov yom Hashem al kol ha-goyim, because the day of Hashem is close against all the nations. Kasher asisa ye'aselach, just as you did will be done to you. Gmulcha yashuv b'roshecha, what you've done wrong will come back on your head. Ki kasher shesisem al har kadshi, because just as you have drank on my holy mountain, meaning you took advantage of Yaakov when he was down, Yishtu Cholagoyim Tamid, all of the nations will drink as well. They will drink that pain as well. Vishasu Vilau, they will drink and they will be destroyed. Vihalyu Kilohayu, they will be like they have never been. Esav is being taken to task in these psukim, not for attacking Yaakov, not for being the one to take Yaakov into Gullus, not for enslaving Yaakov, but rather for aiding and abetting another nation that attacks Yaakov, for standing by and letting it happen, for taking advantage of it happening and taking Yaakov's wealth, for talking big and talking in an arrogant way when Yaakov is being attacked, for coming into Yerushalayim and taking things, for cutting off those who run away, for taking the escapees and giving them back or giving them over to the marauding, attacking nation. For all of this, Esav is going to be punished for standing by, and it will be as if they did it. Now, you can ask, why doesn't Ovadia say that Esav is going to be punished for attacking Yaakov, for being the ones who attack Yaakov, for being the ones who are the nation that enslaves Yaakov. We know that this happened. We know that Edom, who destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash, is Esav. So we are aware that it happened. And it seems that Ovadia is focusing more on Esav's standing by and aiding and abetting when a different nation attacks Yaakov. So it could be that the reason for this is because, as we already explained last week, Esav had a role to play. That role was to be the ones who would support Yaakov in the most direct and most profound manner. That was Esav's role to play. Esav rejected that role by rejecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nevertheless, Esav still plays that role, because when Klal Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom, does not do the right thing, then Esav is empowered. And it's a seesaw. And when Klal Yisrael, who is in control of the seesaw, if Klal Yisrael does not do the right thing, then Esav is on top and Yaakov is on the bottom. When Yaakov does the right thing, Yaakov is on top and Esav is on the bottom. If Esav has the power to attack Yaakov and does so, so as we mentioned last week, that does not exempt Esav. It's not a positive thing, and he will get his due for that. But there, at least, Esav can claim some level of excuse in saying that the very fact that Esav is empowered proves that Yaakov must necessarily have done wrong. The way Yitzchak says it to Esav is "V'haya kasher tarid." And it will be when you have the right to complain over the fact that Yaakov got the brachos, when your complaint is valid, because Yaakov is not acting as Yaakov, ufarakto ulo me'al tzavarecha, you will throw his yoke off from upon your neck. In that instance, Esav is free to do as he pleases. Whereas if Yaakov is doing the right thing, Esav is not in control. So in the event that Esav is empowered and is able to successfully attack Yaakov, although Esav will get his due for that, but Esav does have some level of excuse to say, I may not be perfect, I may not be doing the right thing, but Yaakov clearly is not doing the right thing. Had Yaakov been doing the right thing, I would not have the power to attack him. I would not have the power to successfully defeat him. What's being described here is a situation where Esav did not have the power to attack and defeat Yaakov. Rather, a different nation was attacking and perhaps even defeating Yaakov. But Esav was not empowered. If Esav was not empowered to do so, then that does suggest that although Yaakov is being punished for something, because there is a nation that is defeating Yaakov, nevertheless, it is not to the extent that Esav has been empowered. Not to the extent that seesaw has actually shifted completely to put Yaakov on the bottom and Esav on top. Which means Esav does not really have the right to complain about the brachos. Although Yaakov may be being punished, let's use the example of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, which was not at the hands of Edom, it was at the hands of Bavel. And in that instance, although we did Averos, and we deserved to have the Beis HaMikdash destroyed, we were taken into Galus, but it was not to the extent that empowered Esav. And therefore, Esav's excuse is diminished. He can't really argue that Yaakov has sinned to the point that Esav has the right to complain over the brachos. And in that instance, what does Esav do? And the Navi says, in that instance, your job, Esav, is what it always is, which is to enable Yaakov to do the right thing, to help Yaakov, to step in on his behalf. But if you stand by and let it happen, if you are happy that it's happening, if you talk arrogantly as it's happening, if you take their money when it's happening, if you cut off those who escape when it's happening, if you take those who escape and enslave them to the nation that has attacked them, you are going to be blamed for every one of those acts, as if you committed it yourself. And you're going to be held accountable for all of that. Esav is being told that despite what happened with the brachos, despite what happened with Yaakov and with Rivka and Yitzchak, despite all of that, Esav is expected to help Yaakov, to be on Yaakov's side. Even though we say it's a halacha, Esav sones Yaakov, Esav hates Yaakov, the pasuk says, Vayistom Esav es Yaakov, Esav detested Yaakov, but Esav is still being taken to task for not standing by Yaakov. And that is forever going to be Esav's problem, because he's never going to stand by Yaakov, and therefore he will be punished not only for what he does, but for what all the other nations do against Yaakov. Whenever any nation does something to Yaakov, Esav is also blamed. That's a very, very significant point. When the Arabs, when they attack, if they hurt someone, chas v'shalom, and they attack someone, they do property damage. When there's problems in Eretz Yisrael because of the Arabs, not only are the Arabs going to be punished for what they're doing, but Esav will be punished for what the Arabs are doing. Because Esav is expected to step in and do what they can to help Yaakov. Again, we don't know with certainty who Esav is today. We presume it's Western man, but we don't know for a fact. If it is, in fact, the United States, then there is an expectation that they help Klal Yisrael. It's not something that is nice thing if they do it. There is an expectation that they do, and if they don't, whatever is done to hurt Yaakov will not only be will those who do the hurting be punished, but Esav will be punished as well. And that's the expectation that the Navi is saying is upon Esav. It's a very powerful point. We have found in recent times that Western man has, in many instances, come to the aid of Yaakov. We can't say they've come to the aid to the best of their ability, but they have come in certain instances to the aid of Yaakov. But it's never fully. Again, we don't know who Esav is, so that's why I'm hesitant to really draw the analogy over here. But in World War II, when finally Western man did ultimately liberate us from Nazi Germany, Yimach Shemam, but by the time they did it, there weren't that many people to liberate. They are blamed. They are blamed despite the fact they ended up liberating, but they didn't do it fast enough. They didn't take in enough refugees. All of that they are blamed for. Whatever help is being done to Eretz Yisrael, there's a lot of help being given. But if it's not as much help as can possibly be given, then they are blamed. That is what the Navi is saying. It's not an optional thing for Esav to help Yaakov. Esav is expected to step in and help Yaakov. And simply standing by is enough to be punished for anything that happens.
Last week, that the halacha sone Yaakov was an impact that happens because they hate us, then makes us turn to Hashem.
Yes.
And so
it's what forces us, because if we turn away from Hashem, then their anti-Semitism will send us back to Hashem.
So then by the same token of them allowing other people also to be anti-Semites.
No, because if they themselves are not being given power over Yaakov, then it shows that Yaakov is not to that point yet. It's only in a case where they are given, like with the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, where Esav is given power over Yaakov, then that shows that Yaakov has sunk to the point when Esav has the right to complain over the brachos.
But they're still having a positive impact on bringing Bnei Yisrael closer to Hashem because the enemies are attacking.
And it's so not for them. It's not for them to decide what impact to have. Anti-Semitism is not good.
Right. That's why you get like a little shtach about how he was still serving Yaakov.
Yes.
Because
yes. Ultimately, that is what's going to happen. And ultimately, even when they do the wrong thing, they're still sending us back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is true. But they're still blamed not only for what they do, but for their not coming to the aid of Yaakov. That's how far it goes. Esav is ultimately has to pay a very, very big price. They are held accountable far more so than the rest of the non-Jews.
Rabbi, we have the Bible, right? So we know what we should be doing and what we shouldn't. How do they know that that's what they should be doing?
The Gemara says that the Bnei Noach, not just Esav, but all of the Bnei Noach, are held accountable for any of the averos that they do because they are not learning from us. What they should be doing is they should be telling us, all of you should be in Eretz Yisrael, you should have a Beis HaMikdash and a king, and you should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and teach us how to live. By not doing so, they're to blame. Ignorance is not an excuse. They don't need any warning. They are automatically held accountable for any of the Sheva Mitzvahs that they don't perform.
What if the Jews aren't doing what they're supposed to do?
It's a good point. They are blamed for everything they do. There is no excuse. Every one of the, if a non-Jew does not know that they're not supposed to eat meat that was taken from a live animal, they don't know that the non-kosher meat that is being served in McDonald's was meat that came from a limb from an animal that was bludgeoned but not dead, and then the machine already tore the limb off the animal, and now it's in a burger being served in McDonald's. That person who eats it is chayav misa for eating it, even though they don't know anything about it. Doesn't make a difference. There are no excuses. None. Zero excuses.
So in the Olam Haba, they get it? Like,
whenever it happens. It's not our, we aren't in control. But the Gemara makes it very, very clear. There are no excuses.
Even today?
No excuses. None.
Even then, when Klai Yisrael is not doing what they're supposed to do?
There's no excuses. The Gemara says very clearly in Bava Kamma, there's no excuses.
So we won't ask what Klai Yisrael has coming.
Klal Yisrael has excuses. There's such a thing called Tinuk Shanishba. Klal Yisrael, there's such a thing as an Ones. Somebody didn't know. But the rest of the world does not have any excuse.
So we can have Tinuk Shanishba, but they can't?
Correct.
Why?
That's the rule. That's the way it goes. It does seem, because they're to blame. We're the way we are because they are acting the way they're not letting us.
But you just said that we... Like,
that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's problem. If he wants to punish us, he'll punish us. It's Mirisham Yetzirasha. Evil comes from evil people. Hashem doesn't need their help.
So
he uses them.
Because our job is harder, that we're given more leeway in it, and since theirs is just a supportive role that maybe they shouldn't require the...
I guess so. Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. Trust me, they have a lot of Jewish blood on their hands. Way, way, way more than they'll be able to atone for.
Okay. So is most of the world, like we're saying America, that's perhaps Bnei Esav, then that's...
We don't know. We don't know who Bnei Esav is.
Right? Like it could be people in Europe too that...
We don't know. We don't know. Pasuk Yizayim, verse 17. Uvahar Tzion tiafleita v'haya kodesh. And on the mountain of Tzion there will be salvation, escape, and it will be holy. V'yarshuves Yaakov eis morasheim. And this is now talking about the future. The house of Yaakov will take over, will conquer those who had conquered them. They will be able to reconquer and take back what is theirs. And here we have one of the most famous psukim about Esav. V'hayav eis Yaakov eish, the house of Yaakov will be fire. Uveis Yosef lehava, and the house of Yosef will be the flame. Uveis Esav lekash, and the house of Esav will be straw. V'dolku vahem, and they will ignite them. V'achalum, and consume them. V'lo yesarid Leves Esav, there will be nothing left from the house of Esav. Ki Hashem diber, for Hashem has spoken. The analogy and the picture of straw, dry straw, which catches fire, and you have an inferno suddenly with all the straw being consumed. This is what happens, what will happen to Esav all of the power of Esav, which is quite powerful, will suddenly be destroyed. And it will come from the Beis Yaakov Eish, the fire of Beis Yaakov, or Beis Yosef Lehava, and the flame of Beis Yosef. To read to you from the way Rashi says it, quoting this pasuk at the end of the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. After Parshas Vayishlach goes through all of the toldos, all the generations of Esav, then the pasuk says, Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Aviv Beretz Kanaan. Yaakov dwelled in the land of the sojourning of his father, the land of Canaan. Eilet toldos Yaakov, these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana, Yosef was 17 years old. So Rashi then says over here, Medrash Agada Doresh, so the Medrash says, I jumped ahead. After first telling us a very quick synopsis of Esav's generations, then the Torah discusses Yaakov in great detail. And then Rashi says, Davar Acher, Vayeshev Yaakov, HaPishtani Hazeh, this Pishtani, this person who has a lot of flax, Nichnesu Gimalov to Unin Pishtan. His camels came in laden with flax. Hapechami Tama. There's a blacksmith standing there and he's perplexed. Ana Yikanes Kola Pishtan Azeh. Where's all this flax going to go? All these truckloads of flax. There's no building to hold it all. Where's it all going to go? Haya Pikeach Echad Meshivlo. There was a wise man standing there who answers the blacksmith. Nitzotz echad yotze mi mafuach shalcha, one spark will come out of your bellows, sheshesorif eskula, which will burn the entire thing down. That it can go very quickly. Kach Yaakov ra kol ha'alufim maksuvim amayla. Yaakov saw all of the multitudes of people, the leadership, everything that was written above about Esav. Toma, he was perplexed. V'amar, he said, "Miyachol lichbosh es kulan? How could anybody conquer all of these people, all these nations, all these, all this power?" Makosav lamata. What does it say afterwards? Eile toldos Yaakov Yosef. These are the generations of Yaakov Yosef. Uchsiv, and the pasuk says, we just read it. V'hayah beis Yaakov eish uveis Yosef lahava. The house of Yaakov will be fire, the base of Yosef will be the flame, the base of Lakash, the base of will be straw. Nitzotz yotze mi Yosef, a spark will come out of Yosef, shemechala v'soref es kulam, that will burn the entirety of Esav. That is what will happen. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. And as we always say when we talk about this, it is a pointless thing to speculate. We don't know how it's going to happen. The Rambam says that any time spent trying to speculate about how or what is a waste of time and nothing good comes from it. But we do know the Psukim, and we can mention the Psukim, and we do know the Gemaras, which we can mention the Gemaras. The Gemara tells us that there will be Mashiach ben David who will come. The Psukim say Mashiach ben David will come, and he will be the king of Klal Yisrael, and he will rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. We know that is going to happen. We also know there is a concept of Mashiach ben Yosef. We don't know much about Mashiach ben Yosef. There's very little that we know about it. It's very, very, even not just in the Psukim, but in the Gemara, in the Midrashim, there's very, very little written about Mashiach ben Yosef. Much of what anybody says is purely speculative. Don't get bogged down trying to think about or discuss Mashiach ben Yosef. It is a waste of time. But we do know there will be a Mashiach ben Yosef. The Gemara tells us that Mashiach ben Yosef will at some point be killed or die, and there will be a tremendous levaya. There will be a huge funeral for Mashiach ben Yosef that will be attended by, and among other people, but by all of the family of David HaMelech, because Mashiach ben Yosef will be the one that will enable the coming of Mashiach ben David. but he will eventually die or be killed or something. We don't know exactly. We don't know who it is. We don't know how it's going to happen. The only reason why the Gemara brings this in Maseches Sukkah is because at that funeral, the pasuk makes it clear, unequivocally, that at that funeral, the men will be on one side and the women will be on the other side. That there will be separated men and women. And the Gemara says, if at a funeral, which is a sad time, and if it is in the future when the Yetzer Hara is greatly diminished, yet there is a requirement that men be separated and women be separated, in our day and age, and if it's a simcha, all the more so, you must separate the men and the women. That is why the Gemara brings it. It's talking about the Simchas Beis HaShoeva in the Gemara in Sukkah, and that's why it cites this. That's the only reason why it's brought up. It's not brought up to discuss Mashiach ben Yosef. It's brought up to mention that at the funeral of Mashiach ben Yosef, there will be a clear separation of men and women. That's the reason why it is there. It is clear to me from that Gemara that although we don't know much about Mashiach ben Yosef, but if we hope for there to be a Mashiach ben Yosef, we better separate the men and the women. That is clear to me. Yosef stands for the separation of men and women. Yosef was Mefat Beit Yitzro. Yosef stood up to Eshes Potiphar. Yosef HaTzadik stands for that clear boundary between men and women. And if we ever hope for Mashiach ben Yosef to come to then herald Mashiach ben David, then we had better make sure that we are taking steps to keep men and women appropriately separated. As the Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, that at a shir, when they would come to hear a shir before Pesach, before Sukkot, or on Pesach, or on Sukkot, not only would they separate the men and women, but different Amoraim, Rava, Abaye, they would place between the men and women items that would make noise if someone would cross the aisle. And that way it would alert people that someone, it wasn't a mechitza, they weren't dancing or anything, it was just coming to hear a shir. But they would separate the men and the women, and there would be noisemakers between them, so that if anybody would try to cross over, there would be noise and people would hear it, and they would realize that there is an inappropriate interaction going on. But we know there is a concept of Mashiach ben Yosef. Here we find that Yosef is the flame that comes from the fire. A fire is very powerful, but a fire is small. The flame is what shoots out, what comes forward, what makes it large and a big, powerful flame. That is what Yosef is. And we are in the gullus of Edom, of Esav. And for the Gullus of Edom to be defeated, we need the flame of Yosef, which will come from the fire. And that is the base Yosef Esh, and that will defeat Esav. And Chazal tell us that this is, Yosef is Sitno Shel Esav. Yosef is the one who is the Satan of Esav, meaning he's the one who goes against Esav. Yaakov was afraid to leave Lavan's house until Yosef was born. Once Yosef was born, Yaakov knew that whenever he would leave Laban's house, the next hurdle would be Esav. He knew that, which is what happened. He leaves Laban's house, and Esav comes at him with 400 men. He knows that this is what's going to happen, that Esav is the next step. And he is afraid to leave Laban until Yosef is born. Once Yosef is born, then he has the courage to leave Laban's house. And that is because Yosef is Sitno Shel Esav. That is also why we find that Yosef stands up in front of Rachel and blocks Esav's vision, that he cannot see Rachel, because Yosef is able to stand up to Esav. And it's the Bnei Rachel, the children of Rachel, that ultimately destroy Esav. And that is this pasuk here, that the Beis Yaakov is Esh, but the Beis Yosef is Lehava. And it is from the Beis Yosef that Esav will be destroyed.
What's the significance of using Beis Yaakov in this pasuk?
It might be a reference to the women. It may be. It's unclear. When we find that Chazal say that Beis Yaakov means the women, yeah, that is usually when it says Beis Yaakov and it also says Beis Yisrael or Bnei Yisrael. So when you have the two next to each other, Beis Yaakov is the women. But when you only have Beis Yaakov, it's unclear whether that is a reference to the women or it's a reference to everybody. It is a good point, it is worth thinking about, but it is unclear if that is the case over here. In Matan Torah, when it says, Kosomar leBeis Yaakov v'sagei leBnei Yisrael, since it says Beis Yaakov and then it says Bnei Yisrael, that's how we know that one is talking about the women, one is talking about the men.
Right, but also it says,
yes. Yeah. It's very possible that that is the case. And as we have spoken about in the past, in the Chumash Shir, when we spoke about Parsha of Sota, that as we've spoken about then, that the burden of Tznius is on women. That's the burden of Tznius. The mitzvah of Tznius is on everybody, but the burden of Tznius is on women. They are the ones who are able to control it, are the ones who are in, who are given the responsibility of the overall Tznius. When men and women are inappropriately mingling, it should be the women who stand up and say that this is not right. That is what should happen. They should stand up and say this is not right. We don't want this. That is why it is distressing, it is very, very distressing when the issue of mechitza is something that women are complaining about. That is very distressing because women should be the ones who are demanding more tznius, not less.
I want to make two comments. Number one, at the Hesped for Sharon Lichtenthal, more than two rabbis spoke about her being a tznia.
Okay, good. Beautiful.
I know my father-in-law mentioned in Poland, the cemeteries were separate, the men and the women.
There's different minhagim with cemeteries. That's they're different minhagim whether they, that's a you know, burying husbands and wives next to each other. That's a minhag. Some do it a little differently, but there are different minhagim about that.
Maharsha Machpelah has couples.
Yeah. The question is exactly how we don't know exactly how they're buried. In Maris HaMachpelah. We have different rooms, but we don't know exactly how they're buried.
I'm just disturbed maybe because of the time of year, but we had Jews who put fire to the flax, so to speak, of, you know, because the Jews were keeping all the food in the old city, and some other Jews put fire to it, flame and fire. And like,
yep.
That's coming to me like...
That's a good point. It was the Bar Yonim who wanted to fight, and they burned down the storehouses of wheat and barley. That is what happened. It's true. They used fire against ourselves. We hurt ourselves with fire. It's a very good point.
Is this term here, the spark of Yosef, a reference to Mashiach ben Yosef in the future?
It seems that way. Again, we don't know for certain. We do know that Yosef is involved. Now, this is particularly significant because we know that Yosef was with the Aseres HaShvatim. Both Menashe and Ephraim were with the 10 tribes. And as far as we know, the 10 tribes are still gone since during the first Beis HaMikdash time. That we are primarily made up of three Shvatim, of Yehuda, Binyamin, and Levi. Those are the three Shvatim that we are primarily made up of. Now, Binyamin is a descendant of Rachel, and therefore also has some power over Esav, but still Binyamin is not Yosef. So there is a Gemara that says that even though the 10 Shvatim were taken into Golus, but there were remnants that are with us. That even though the predominantly we are the tribes of Yehuda, Binyamin, and Levi, but that the other tribes are also represented. That towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, Yirmiyahu brought back a small group of the 10 tribes, and it seems that they are among us as well. So that there would be some representation of Yosef, even though it would be a smaller representation. Now it could be that small representation became very large because Yosef was given the bracha of Yidgu Larov Bekerav Haaretz, that they would multiply like fish throughout the land. And Yosef is also blessed with not being affected by Ayin Har. Ayin Har is jealousy. And therefore, it could be that small amount of the 10 tribes that came back did produce a lot of Yosef. So that today, for all we know, there are a large representation of Yosef among us, but we don't know. As with everything, we really don't know. The only ones who have some misora of who they are from Levi, which are the Kohanim and the Levim. Even there, it's not 100%, but it's far better than everybody else. Everybody else really does not know what tribe we're from.
When they did know what tribe, if somebody was buried, did they say Ben Yehuda or Ben Naphtali or Ben Yizachar? Today we just say Yisrael, right?
Yeah, when we lived in Eretz Yisrael, so then they were buried in their tribes. Mm-hmm. So you knew because of where they were buried.
But when they went into Galus, did they do that?
I don't think so. We lost the 10 tribes already before the destruction of the first Beis
Hamikdash. They knew what tribe they were from when they got dispersed.
Yeah, but it got lost. It got lost. It's like everything else. It was just so much of upheaval.
It got lost. Also, if they took them to a lot of different countries, they dispersed them.
Yeah.
They were scattered.
So being that there's so many, we're all women in this, in the class is women, and we're saying that the women can cause the Geula to come, I'm just wondering, what's the reason why you select? I always thought it was Emuna, and it was in connection to Hashem, that was the strength that women were supposed to work on to bring the Geula. And now you're saying that's Tznius. And so
what happened in Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim, it was Tznius. That's what it was.
That they thought the Geula was going to come.
Yeah, that is the reason why they did it. It was the reason why they did it. But it was, what they did is, they appropriately interacted with their husbands and stayed away from the Egyptians. That is what it was. Women used their natural physical ability in the appropriate manner. They used it. They did not use it with the Egyptians, with the exception of Shlomo Bas Divri. They did not use it with the Egyptians, and they did use it with their husbands, as we've mentioned in the past, at a time when no one had any interest in procreation whatsoever, and they made sure that there would be children, which is Lashem Shamayim.
And but Lemaisa, that was because of Emunah, right?
Yes, but that is an act of tznius. Using one's koach in the right way is what tznius is. Tznius is not never using one's koach. It's using the koach in the appropriate manner.
Right, and so I'm still trying to figure out the source of that was from Emunah, no?
Yeah.
And that they had to. Okay, so this is, they had the Emunah that there's going to be a Geula, and that they had that it has to come, and there's going to be a future for Klal Yisrael, and they had to make it happen. And so they made it happen in the way with Tznius.
Yeah, but so, I'm just pointing out to you that you're right. It came from Emunah, but what women can do specifically is use that which women have that men don't have. And that is this koach, and using it appropriately and not using it inappropriately. And you see in our dar, you see where we are. You see how far it's gone, and it's going to get worse. It is not going to get better. It is going to get worse. We haven't seen how far it's going to go yet. It is getting worse by the day. It's getting worse by the minute. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And it is only going to get worse. And it is only the women who have the koach to stand up to it. I'm not absolving men. I'm just saying that the strength has to come from the women for this.
Well, if women have more control, maybe.
But like when we had the problem with the Midianite women, it was a man, Pinchas, who put an end to it. It wasn't women who put an end
to it. That is true. He stopped the plague.
The women weren't nechshal. The men were the ones who were nechshal.
They were, but the women didn't somehow try to stop the men from...
I don't know that they did or they didn't.
It wasn't written that they did. It was written that Pinchas, he did...
Well, it was a physical strength.
That's what men do.
Right. What needed to happen over there was a killing. A killing is done by men. Right. That's what had to happen over there. But an overall cultural change, a cultural shift... is a woman's purview. And again, we say it's tznius. That's why you'll excuse me for being so specific. That's why a burqa is not the answer.
Right.
That's not tznius. Uh-huh. That's abrogation. That's not tznius. Tznius is using a koch correctly and not using it incorrectly. It is putting it in its place. That's what tznius is. And it is the women who have that koach to make that happen. It's an incredible thing. I find it an incredible thing that that you can find in the same culture that has such a strong voice about complaining about the objectification of women and the demeaning of women, and yet it is women who want that role, who want to play that role, who want to be out there, want to be in a way that is not sanua and want to be noticed. So it's people. Everybody's talking out of two sides of their mouths. The whole thing is so contradictory. Now we're not talking about the Jews. I mean, we're not talking about the from Jews. We're talking about the culture around us. But it is an incredible thing that you can have within the same culture such a push for not objectifying women, and yet women themselves wanting to be objectified. It's just an incredible thing to me how that plays out. And that's, you know, that is something which is clearly clear. I don't know if it's a challenge of our dar, but it's certainly a very big one.
And if you say anything, you'll be called a misogynist.
Whatever you say, you can't win.
How women who have a focus can have an impact on that.
Say again.
I don't know, okay, so we want to bring the geula, right? And so we want to have this, and you're saying it's getting worse and worse and worse. And so, you know, like, what, where is our, where, how do we have impact on the world?
We need a missa. We need you to speak to the women.
Look around our community. Look at the film women in our community. Is everybody dressing tanua?
No.
I mean, what is happening? Ask yourself. I can't speak about that. Women have to speak about that. But look around. I can't look around. That's how bad it is. Look around. I'm saying it's not, we're talking about our from people. Shomer Shabbos, who, you know, right? But there is apparently, which a man can't really understand, as I don't understand it, but apparently there is a very big drive to want to be noticed. And that seems to be driving a lot of women. I'm not judging anybody because I don't have that same challenge. I have different challenges, but so I'm not here to judge anybody. I'm just saying. But it's it is clearly a big nisayon. If it wasn't such a big nisayon, people wouldn't be doing it. It must be a big nisayon.
You see more in this culture women with uncovered hair who aren't necessarily covering what they should, but they're getting married to guys who wear kippahs and go to, you know, like I always thought it would be.
Yeah.
Couples going the same.
Yeah. No, but you
both don't or both do, but.
Yeah.
But you also have a woman's shape also.
Okay. You can.
Right. We have to figure out how to fix this.
Yeah, we have to
okay.
fix it.
Okay. Let's make sure we finish.
Yeah.
Pasuk.
We're getting excited.
Pasuk Yotess, verse 19.
Okay, we're coming.
V'yarshu ha-negev esharis Esav. The south of Eretz Yisrael, they will take over the mountain of Esav. They will conquer the mountain of Esav, because as I mentioned, Har Esav is in the south of Eretz Yisrael, which is hard to understand today, but that is where it is. V'ashefela es plishtim, and the plains, they will conquer the plishtim. The plishtim is Gaza. V'yarshu es sedei Ephraim, they will conquer the fields of Ephraim, that would be in the north of Eretz Yisrael. Ve'es Sidei Shomron, also the north of Eretz Yisrael. Uvinyamin es Hagilad, and Binyamin, they will go further, and they will conquer the Gilad. The Gilad is in Eivar Hayard, on the other side of the Jordan River. The Galus Hachel Hazeh, and the galus of this nation is in galus, livnei Yisrael asher kananim ad sarfas, for the Jews that they are now. Kananim doesn't mean Canaanites.
Germany.
I'm sorry.
Germany.
Kananim can mean. Yeah, it says the land of the Kananim. I'm not sure what that word Kanana means over here, actually. This is a very mysterious pasuk, because Tsarfas usually means France. The Galus Yerushalayim Asher Bisfarad, right?
It's really Europe.
And
Germany, France, and Europe.
Yeah, and Galus of Yerushalayim in Sfarad, which is Spain. Yirshu Esarei HaNegev, they will conquer the cities of the south. Now, Rashi says over here a fascinating thing, that the Bnei Yisrael, who are the northern kingdom, that's the 10 tribes, they are in the Eretz of the Canaanim, wherever that is, Ad Sarfas, which Rashi says is France, which sounds like Rashi's Fransa Balaz. Sounds like the 10 tribes are the Ashkenazim. The Galus Yerushalayim and the Galus of Yerushalayim, which is the two tribes of Yehuda and Binyamin, Asher B'Sfarad. Oh, wow. Sounds like they are the Sfardim. That's what it sounds like from Rashi. It's very hard to say that because, as we said, the 10 tribes went into Galus before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. And it seems that they were taken to some place that we don't know of. So it's very difficult. We know how Ashkenazim ended up in Europe and how Sfardim ended up. You can follow that historically. And it seems they all came from the second Beis HaMikdash. But that is what Rashi says over here, a very mysterious reference to two different goluses and two different locations, which appear to be Ashkenaz and Sfard. That's what it appears to be. And then finally, there's not much we could say about that. I don't know if it's all very mysterious. But finally, last pasuk, V'alu Moshiim Bahar Tzion Lishpotes Harei Sav, and those who are to save us, they will go up on the mountain of Tzion to judge the mountain of Esav. And when that happens, V'aysa LaHashem HaMelucha, and the Melucha, the kingship, will be to Hashem. And that pasuk, of course, is quoted all the time, and that is the pasuk of the Geula Shalema, of the final Geula B'mherav Yameinu. I meant to lead off by mentioning that I made a mistake last week, thank you to Mrs. Stein for pointing it out to me, that the person who, the son of Achav, who took the who lent the money with interest to Ovadia was Yehoram ben Achav. Last week I said Yehoram was Yehoram ben Achav. It was you who pointed it out to me, right? Yeah, Yehoram ben Achav is the correct name. I apologize for that.
I apologize about my phone. I'm just waiting for something important.
That's fine.
I tried muting it.
Yeah, sorry.
Who called you today?
Well, what?
They will come.
Yeah, the Jews living in those areas.
They're going to go be the concord.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Sephardim in France, right?
I don't know what it means.
Is it true, though? That from the countries in Europe, that would be the most Sephardim?
I don't know. I really don't know.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.